news that one of the world's most famous chefs making the rounds at his restaurant in Kuala Lumpur had already gone viral on Malaysian social media before we got to sit down with him for an interview. Did the Gordon Ramsay Bar and Grill at Sunway Resort Hotel live up to his expectations? And what does Gordon Ramsay really think about Malaysian food? Mr. Gordon Ramsay, thank you so much for making time to do this interview with me and having me here.
You're very welcome. And yeah, nice to see you. Thank you for coming.
I understand you just flew in last night.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. It's always a joy. Everyone thinks that flying is a pain, but I love flying.
And the last time you were here was some time back. It was almost 12 years ago, was it?
No, that's incorrect, no. That may be because it's been in the press, but I've been here before then. And also, I like to come in and do my R&D prior to opening. So, been a huge fan of Southeast Asia. And then, just what I've learned from the first time, which was back in 2006. So, yeah, I've been multiple times.
Can you talk to us about why are you here this time around and what are you looking forward to in Malaysia?
Opening up Gordon Ramsay Bar and Grill inside this beautiful hotel was a dream come true. Bringing something quintessentially British, combining that with the local talent, training that talent and getting a piece of sort of history into this hotel was crucial. So the build was beautiful, the design has been amazing, and when you walk through, it's just like this gorgeous, opulent dining room that is here to spoil you.
This is the first bar and grill outside of the UK.
That's right.
Can I ask you, why did you choose Malaysia for this?
I've always been a huge fan of Malaysian cuisine. Not just the power of the spice, the heat, but the work ethic. There's something quite British about how hard we work, and that level of perfection is in my DNA. So being given that opportunity to establish the brand, put something unique on the map, and then respect the sort of multicultural melting pot in Malaysia, draw from that experience, and then bring something magical to Malaysia. That was a dream come true.
Now on that note, I would like to ask you, what about Malaysian cuisine that stands out to you?
Yeah, as you know, Malaysian cuisine is built up many complex layers that intertwine on the fusion. And you think of the amount of dishes, the hallmarks, the crossover, the religious aspect, and that multicultural melting pot for me is something that I feel very comfortable in, whether it's the classics, the staples, or whether it's a beautiful rendang, the pace that goes into making a beautiful curry, the fragrance of Malaysian cuisine. So, yeah, I'm a big lover of Malaysian cuisine.
Well, you've certainly traveled to this part of Asia many times while doing your filming and also your restaurants. How has your cooking style been influenced by Asian cuisine?
Yeah, I like the fusion. And so I'd be very silly not to embrace what's happening locally here, try to source as much produce as we can. And then it comes down to the talent, the chefs in the kitchen. I have one European chef and 27 locals. And so the setup was extraordinary. The teaching was just crafted in a way that it was a lot of training, a lot of understanding. And I taught all the young cooks to taste first before we can cook. If you don't know what it tastes like, you shouldn't be cooking it. So we spent many weeks just tasting and understanding what those three or four things mean to you on a plate. So I'm happy. I mean, any brand new restaurant takes between sort of 6 and 9, sometimes 12 months to settle down and find its way. So the problem we had here is that we opened up and it was fully booked, and it was 20 odd thousand reservations within the first month, and so that's a lot of volume.
That's wonderful.
We've only got 140 seats, so I said to the team, pace yourself, there's no race. This is a marathon. Malaysia, we're here for a long time, this is not a 100 meter sprint.
That's great to hear. Now, you spoke about talent, and I do wonder, what does it take for someone to work for you?
I inspire a lot of individuals because I'm loyal, and that's one thing I look in at any chef, is that level of loyalty, vision, and then the discipline. I can teach them, you know, 7 days a week, but when I'm not here, they need to teach themselves to be like me in a way that they maintain standards and push further for that. So discipline, respect for ingredients, and just having that vision on where to draw the line on the seasoning, the decorative part, and don't get carried away with too many pictures. So they're the three main qualities that help build the profile of an amazing young chef.
You have so many restaurants all around the world, and you spoke about consistency. Mm. And I do wonder, how do you do that with one person, and Gordon Ramsay himself? Yeah. And how do you maintain that across all the other restaurants, and to maintain not just consistency in terms of food, but also service?
That's right. That's a really good question. Something of this magnitude can't be done many times. And so if you look at the portfolio of restaurants that we run, it's got the fast casual, super casual, one-star Michelin, two-star Michelin, three-star Michelin. So you have to conceptualize the restaurant to what the standards require, and then train and embrace talent, and then create opportunities where they can cross over into different layers to get more experience. And so how do we maintain consistency? I think it's down to the quality of ingredients, the delivery of those dishes, and not overshooting the mark. That's really important. You can't go around the world opening two-star, three-star Michelin restaurants. Restaurant Gordon Ramsay today celebrates 25 years open, and we're in our 23rd year with three Michelin star. Now that's got a tiny dining room, 40 seats. 57 staff and 40 seats. So if you think of the ratio of that per chair to member of staff, it's perfection 5 days a week.
Yeah.
So each restaurant is tailor-made, but I don't control them all. It's impossible. I'd be an idiot to think I can control them all. What I do is have a presence in all of them. And what I can do is make sure that we're consistent, and that's the name of the game.
How do you maintain that connection with your team?
That's a good question.
All over the world.
Yeah, so unlike any other brands, you know, we're 2.5 decades of team, and from head of culinary to head of service to mixologist to R&D chefs, or any time there's a latest restaurant, we were eating in a wonderful tapas bar in Barcelona a couple of months back. So when something new is open, the team are in there, and they're getting inspired. So how do we maintain that? It's a huge team. In the UK alone, we're over 1,300 staff. So it's a big outfit now.
In UK alone, 1,300?
Just in the UK, and 3,000 globally. So,
wow.
There's a lot of talent. And unfortunately, I'm the one that sat, you know, at the top of the tree, I suppose, because I started it. But you should see what's behind me and alongside me. It makes me so happy to see them doing so well.
It's a big empire.
It never started like that. It was one restaurant, one dream team, and it's grown, but things grow across six months.
So tell me that, why Malaysia, and why it took you so long to come here?
When Malaysia came calling, first of all, you gotta look at the position. The setup and the, you know, the compatibleness. Can you work with a partner, and do they strive for what you stand for, and can they protect and enhance what you're doing? The chairman here is just, you know, a absolute legend in a way that the education and what the college and uni stands for is philanthropy work. What he's doing as a sustainable, future-facing brand, the mall that he runs. And so I was excited about the setup. If the setup's right and that infrastructure's there, then we've got a chance of getting the success. If we're compatible, we're on the same page, and we share that same vision, then it's a no-brainer. So I'm quite picky where we go and who we do it with. And so to do my first bar and grill in Malaysia outside of Mayfair, London, yeah, it's got off to a great start. But it's the customers that confirm that, you know, 22,000 reservations in the first month booked. And we took a lot of criticism for it, but I don't want to do 2,000 people a day. I want to do special. It's 140 seats, so.
You say pace yourself.
Yeah, and also there's no rush.
Yeah.
But there's a certain amount of expectations. There's an energy in this city, and there's a demand for good food.
For an establishment like this bar and grill, is it important that it goes with the local taste? Because bar and grill is not something that is very Malaysian. Mm-hmm. So for someone who's here, do you ensure there's some localness in it?
Mm, that's a good question. I think the blends of spices and what we do, mm-hmm. the garnishes. I was tasting the sprouts this morning. They're roasted with a blend from the local market. I think we need to be smart and not insult. I wouldn't bring locals here to eat Malaysian food. I'm using Malaysian ingredients and developing, you know, a standard that we produce in London, from the Wellington to the scallops, yeah. and a sort of a European quintessential Britishness. So it's definitely something different. The locals are biting, and we've got off to a great start. We're 6 months in, so I still consider us very new.
Yes.
And now that the pandemic is gone and we can start that grassroots effect and start building the standards.
There was a lot of excitement when this opened about 6 months ago. Malaysia's always been known as a food destination among travelers, but never quite a culinary hub in Asia. I think only until recently that the Michelin Guide has decided to put Malaysia on the map with Penang and Kuala Lumpur. So I do want to get your thoughts about the Malaysian culinary scene.
Yeah, you know, 10 years ago it was Japanese and Norwegian influences that were blending. We still draw huge amounts from the Malaysian DNA. Vietnamese, Southeast Asia, it's, like I said, is this wonderful melting pot. I think the Michelin are very wise to establish in those two major areas. And I think it's a confirmation of how Malaysian cuisine was always the sleeping beauty of Southeast Asia. They never really got the look it deserved. I think Malaysia was going through what Britain went through 20 years ago. And when I first stepped in France, to train in the 90s, they would look at me and they'd brush me off to the side because they never took any British food, chef, cook, ideas seriously. And so I'm glad that Michelin's now put in the spotlight. I think it'll be a welcomed success. And also, it's about time it got the credit it deserves, because I discovered this place nearly 20 years ago and I was blown away. And then the culture of the hard work, that we're not scared to work here, and there's an acceptance of graft that they put in daily. It doesn't just land on their, you know, on their lap.
I'm sure a lot of Malaysian chefs would like to know, what does Gordon Ramsay think of the Malaysian culinary scene, and what can he do to be better?
Yeah, I think we're all looking to do better. The Brits are looking to do better. The Spanish are looking to do better. The French don't want to sit on their laurels, or they want to try and cook food with no cream or butter. That's very hard for the French. So Malaysia has to sort of represent Asia as a pillar in amongst greatness and be part of that foundation. So the Malaysian Culinary Institute have got nothing to worry about. I think it's just about to implode globally, because it's now being well recognized, and rightly so. So yeah, certainly nothing to fear. But about time it got pushed to the Premier League, because it deserves to be there.
Well, that's a good analogy. Okay, now, I'd like to just switch gears a bit to talk about yourself. Where do you find your inspiration?
Mm-hmm. I find my inspiration majority of the time through travel. Mm-hmm. And when I'm not opening restaurants, I'm abseiling down a waterfall or jumping out of a helicopter in the middle of Guyana, the Amazon jungle. So I I get to source and educate myself on a weekly basis. So I'm one of the luckiest chefs on the planet, and I've been to nearly every corner of the planet, and the only thing I wanted to do is get away from anything touristy and to dive into the local scene, whether it's digging a pit for a hungi in New Zealand to roast a lamb, or diving for hand-dive scallops on the coast of Norway. I'll find it. Or chasing white salmon in Alaska and getting chased by bears. So yeah, I love that foodie adventure, and it's super dangerous, but exciting.
So you travel so much, but is there one dish of food that you always go back to wherever you are in the world?
Butter chicken. It's this beautiful tomato-based gravy with fenugreek in abundance, and a hint of masala, and a beautiful buttered chicken.
It doesn't sound that simple.
Oh, it is. I can make it in 20 minutes. And in order to perfect the buttered chicken, you know, I went to Motimoho, the birthplace in India of buttered chicken, to craft that. So, yeah, buttered chicken is the pick-me-up comfort curry that's done with chicken thighs and this beautiful tomato gravy that is just off the charts.
And what would be the toughest dish you've ever cooked in your career?
Toughest dish I've ever cooked. God, there's many. I think the surprise and the element of a Wellington, and I see the demand for the Wellingtons here.
Yep.
You could do all the prep, the seasoning, the searing, the rolling, the tightness, but you never know how perfect that is until you do the first cut. So I still get excited now, having cooked thousands of wellies. In fact, at Christmas time, the family called me Lord Wellington because I obsess over these freaking things. And so the kids know how important this is. They look at this fillet steak wrapped in puff pastry and I'm saying, no, there's more to than just wrapping it in puff pastry. You know, there's the duxelles, the savory crepe, and then the beautiful parma ham. So a Wellington, that is the dish that is something I'd like to have at my funeral for all my guests, miniature Wellingtons. Because even if they want to take it to go, once they finish crying over the loss of me, they can have it the next day as a salad. Beautiful Caesar salad with a cold Wellington. It's delicious.
I'm looking forward to try it.
I'm telling you.
Okay, so as a celebrity chef, are you still able to walk into a restaurant and enjoy the food without getting hounded by people?
Oh, it's a tough one, that one. I love eating out. And I'm a very busy chef that happens to work on TV as well. So I love being the other side of the fence. I'll be honest, every time we go out, I get spoiled and the chef wants to send several courses and then they want to meet, which is always nice. But sometimes I just want to sit in the corner and eat two or three courses and keep my head down.
Do you do a stealth mode, going quietly?
I try. I try very hard. But with this size nose and these size feet, I get spotted very quickly.
All right. Do you still get invited to dinner parties by your friends? And if you do, do they allow you to critique their food?
Yeah, so I've stopped being invited to dinner parties, which is such great news. Sometimes it's very hard if the food's bad. You have to be super diplomatic. 9 times out of 10, if I am at a party, I'll end up finishing off or slicing or serving. I'll do something. So, yeah. I'm not very good at dinner parties. That's a bit of a weakness for me.
Okay. Now, you are really big on TikTok. I saw last night it was like 35 million followers. I want to get your thoughts about, because there are a lot of private chefs are now celebrities thanks to social media like TikTok, right?
Yeah.
Do you think it is easier for chefs now to gain public recognition compared to before?
There was a stigma in many restaurants where chefs got upset with the social media intrusion. I'm an advocate for that because I think it's the best way to highlight any restaurant through social media platform, and it's instant. We could be sat here now, I could show you a picture from the latest restaurant's opening in Sydney Harbour, and we got the image and we got the live footage within seconds. So I welcome that intrusion. I think it's the customer's prerogative to take pictures because they're paying for the dinner or the lunch. That's their special moment. And I think there's a huge surge of talent that's on social media that is really helping to improve the image of the industry. So I'm a big fan of that. I launched the competition last year in LA called Next Level Chef.
Mm-hmm.
And it was putting professional chefs, home chefs, and social media chefs into the same arena for the first time ever to cook and to compete. And there was a newfound respect for social media chefs because the professional chefs didn't really consider them to be a threat, but until they saw how focused they were on making mm-hmm. something look spectacular and tasting delicious, was a big wake-up call.
Have you been able to spot any talent from social media?
Yeah, many. Many a talent. And we get inundated with, you know, messages, requests,
sure.
Resumes. Oh, we see a lot of talent on social media. And I, you know, we have 35 million followers on TikTok. You know, that is a lot of people watching what you're doing just on one platform. Combined across Instagram, Twitter, and yep. Facebook, we're 100 million. So our demos range from 4-year-olds to 84-year-olds. So I welcome that social media platform because it's good to connect with the people.
All right. No, I'm sure you get asked about this, but I do wonder, for someone who's running such a big empire, how do you balance finding creativity and also managing yeah. your business?
I have a freaking good assistant in a lady called Rachel Ferguson, and she absolutely manages my diary. She's time efficient. Then there's the quality R&D time when I'm spending time with mm-hmm. chefs. Then there's the insight to the operations and when I'm spending time front of house. And then there's family time. So that balance is something that it takes a long time to work towards. But once you get that balance right, it's beautiful. So yeah, that is structured in a way that I'm full on filming, full on opening a restaurant, full on having downtime, and full on having a dance with my daughter on TikTok.
The key to that is Rachel.
Rachel first. Every great chef needs an absolute amazing assistant because they manage your diary and they take over because chefs are generous souls because we give and 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 we want to be generous, and then you're generous in your life with your career, and then yeah. you're generous with your time. And so running multiple charities and having such demands on my time, I need a brick wall that I can hide behind, and that's Rachel. So she's the baddie who says, no, he hasn't got time. Yes, I can fit that in. Only if it's 8 o'clock. Yes, I can get that done if you want to jump on a call before 6.
Okay.
And so, yeah, she's the baddie. Rachel Ferguson.
Okay, so you have a very tough personality on TV.
Do you think so?
Yes, I've really? Seen videos.
Tell me about those videos, because I don't watch them.
Let's just say I was a bit intimidated before I came for this interview, but then I've heard really nice things.
So, so, were you watching Kitchen Nightmares?
Yes.
So we have to be tough love on that, right? We have to go in with a insight to fixing them. Sometimes mm. it's the relationship before the restaurant. Then you leave the prescription, and you've gone to a doctor before, and you had to, if you don't follow that prescription, then you don't get better. So when those restaurants are up and running and successful, they don't ring you up and give you praise. When they close, you get blamed. So yeah, I'm screwed either way, but it doesn't stop me from doing my job. So I think that level of firmness is about being honest.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm gonna absolutely
love you for your honesty.
I am not changing that. Yeah. I am definitely not changing that because I want my customers to be honest with me. And trust yeah. me, if there's a bread roll that's not seasoned properly and the Wellington isn't medium rare like you said it would be, they send their food back twice as quick because it's a named chef and a named restaurant. So I love that, mm-hmm. that pressure.
Are you also a tough businessman?
Tough businessman, in a way that, that's a really good question. I've never looked at myself. I have a CEO, mm-hmm. I have a CFO. And so all those titles I'm not very good at. I'm the face of the restaurants. I am one of the strongest creators inside that restaurant. In terms of a tough businessman, I think I'm more ruthless in a way that, you know, I've learned through my mistakes. I've failed mm-hmm. On several occasions. But I've never made that same mistake twice. And you can't learn that at university. You can get all the prognosis for the insight, the documents, and learn and pass the exam. But the actual tangible running of a business, you need to do through your fingers. You need to run it. So I've been a pot washer, a cook, an executive chef, a CEO and a chairman. I've been all those. And I still go into my kitchen on a daily basis. And I haven't got my name on my jacket. I'm not good at titles.
You don't need a name on your jacket.
No, I know, but I suppose what I was trying to say is that I... God, how do I put this? I work at it. Mm-hmm. And so I don't... Yeah, I do a lot of things behind the scene and make decisions that is based on the experience over the last 2.5 decades.
Yeah. Which leads me to my final question. Now, you run a very successful empire. 7 Michelin stars, your name now.
Yes.
And throughout your career, you had 16.
Yes.
Is there anything else left on Gordon Ramsay's bucket list?
Yes, there is. Is to go down that huge slide of Sunway water park down there and ride that wave. Is there anything left? We're so close. 3 stars in England back in 2001, and the second Brit and the first ever Scottish chef to win that accolade. And you'll see the same next month when the local chefs in KL, Penang, get their stars. It's quite an amazing thing. And then I went to France and put a stake in the ground in France, and we won 2 stars in Bordeaux. And so I'm not quite done yet, because I won't stop until we get 3 stars in France, because it meant so much to me as a chef growing up and learning from the French to go back and to be as good as the French. It makes you sleep at night.
Well, thank you so much, Gordon, for your time.
You're very welcome.
I really appreciate you spending time to do this. I know you're a very busy man, and I hope we can have you back here in Malaysia for a longer period of time.
I look forward to it. Thank you.
Thank you.